Good morning, everybody. What I thought we could do today is go through two episodes that appear at the beginning of this week's parsha, Parshas Vayechi, and we'll try and do it with a little bit of a discerning eye, and ask a couple of questions, and try and gain a little bit more insight. The very opening of the parsha, we're going to skip, had a few different thought processes go through my head in terms of exactly where to start, how to present, whatever. So we're going to actually skip source number one for the time being. We'll start with source number two. The beginning of this week's parsha, and it's a mistake here, it should be Bereishis Perek Mem Zayin, not Perek Mem Ches. It's Bereishis Perek Mem Zayin, Psukim Chaf Ches through Lamed Aleph. Vayihi Yaakov Be'eretz Yisrayim, Shvayas Reishana, Vayihi Yimei Yaakov Shnei Chayav, Sheva Shanim Varbaim U'Me'at Shana. Yaakov was in Eretz Mitzrayim 17 years, and the full life of Yaakov, the years of his life were Sheva Shanim, 7 years, Varbaim U'Me'at Shana, 147. Vayikruvu Yimei Yisrael Lamus, and Yisrael, Yaakov, was nearing the time that he was going to be passing. Vayikra livno li Yosef, so he calls in his son Yosef, Viomerlo, Imnamatasi Chem Beinecha, says to Yosef, If I found favor in your eyes, Simna Yadcha Tachas Yerechi, place your hand beneath my thigh, Viasisa Imadi Chesed Viemes, Al Natsik Rein Mitzrayim. He says, do for me a true favor, a true Chesed, don't bury me in Egypt. So Yosef, Yaakov continues, Veshachavti im avosai, I should lie to rest with my fathers. Unisasani mitzrayim, carry me from Mitzrayim. Ukvartani b'kvurasam, bury me in their burial plot. And what does Yosef respond? Vayomar anochi esek hidvarecha. Yosef says, no problem, I'll do exactly like you say. Yaakov is still not 100% satisfied. He continues in the next pasuk. Vayomer, Yaakov says back to Yosef, hishavali. Right? Swear to me that you're going to do this. I know you said you're going to, but I want you to concretize that promise. Swear. Vayishavalo, and Yosef agrees. Vishtachavu Yisrael al rosh hamita, and he prostrates on the head of the bed. Chazal have different things to say about that, but that's not what we'll focus on right now. So, just when reading this portion of the psukim, just two questions that I want to just put out there, we'll get back to. So number one, the notion of Simna Yadcha Tachas Yerechi, we know that this is a phrase that does appear occasionally in Chumash, you know, it's talking about, it's always in the context of some sort of agreement that is taking place between two people. So Simna Yadcha Tachas Yerechi, so it's, we're going to put that out there. What exactly is the significance of that phrase? Why is it appearing here? What's it doing? What does it mean? And number two, as we kind of alluded to, when Yaakov makes this request of Yosef, and he says, I don't want to be buried in Egypt, so Yosef says, fine, I'll listen to you. I'm going to do exactly what you've asked for me. And then Yaakov is still not 100% satisfied. He says, I want you to swear. I want you to swear that you're going to listen to me. And Yosef, of course, goes ahead and swears. So clearly there's something going on in this little portion, this segment here. You know, there's something that Yaakov is trying to emphasize in this paragraph. And the question is, you know, how does it come together? What exactly is going on? So that's point number one. Episode number two is just a little bit later. This is Bereishis Perek Mem Ches, Psukim Hei through Chaf. And this, of course, is the famous episode in this week's parasha, the switching of Ephraim and Manasseh, when Yaakov comes and he blesses Ephraim and Manasseh, and we know that he switches them. So let's just take a look at this segment, make a few points, and then we'll go from there. V'yata shnei banecha hanodim lecha be'eretz Mitzrayim, ad bo'i elecha Mitzrayim li heim Ephraim Manasseh k'ruvein v'shimon yihiyuli. So we know that Yaakov, as his death approached, so one of the things he did, he called in Yosef, he wanted Yosef to bring his children to get blessed. And so Yaakov says, v'yata shnei banecha hanodim lecha, now Yosef, these two children which were born to you in the land of Egypt, right? He stresses that they were born in the land of Egypt, ad bo'i elecha Mitzrayim, before I'd come to Egypt, they were born before I got here. When I got here, they were already born. Li heim, they should be for me, Ephraim and Manasseh. Ephraim and Manasseh, they're going to be mine. Ki Ruvain v'Shimon yuli. Just like Ruvain and Shimon are my children, so Ephraim and Manasseh are also going to be considered my children from this point on. Or in some respect. You know, the pshat being that they're going to be his children in the sense that they are going to be considered as part of the Shvatim and they're going to inherit their own portion in the land of Eretz Yisrael. Umolada d'chasher holal t'achreihem, any children that you might have after them, l'chayu, they're yours, don't worry about that. Al-shem achayhem yikro b'nachalasam, and they're going to just be included in the general Yosef category, the Ephraim and Manasseh, they'll be subsumed into that family structure, and they'll inherit the land, not as their own separate tribes, but as part of the tribe of Yosef / Ephraim and Manasseh. Vani befodi mipadan aram mipadan meis alai Rachel beeretz Canaan, right? And for me, as I came from Padan and Rachel died in Eretz Canaan, v'derech bo'od kivras eretz lavo efrasa, she died on the way in the stretch of land, v'ekbirasham v'derech efras hi beis lechem, right? I buried her. I didn't wait till we got to beis lechem. I buried her on the way. Vayar Yisrael's bnei Yosef vayomer mi'elas. So then Yisrael sees that the children come in. He says, "Who are these?" Vayomer Yosef el aviv, banayhem asher nasan li elokim bazeh. These are my children Hashem has given to me. Vayomer kachem al na'ilai vavarachem. Right, take them to me, and I'm going to bless them. So continues the psukim. Ve'ene Yisrael kavdu mizokin lo yuchal ros. Right, he wasn't able to see. Vayagish osam elav vayishak lohem vichabek lohem. He blessed that he. Brought them close, and he kissed them, and he hugged them. Vayomer Yisrael Yosef, ro panecha lo filalta, v'nei hera osi elokim gam ezarecha. Right, I didn't even think that I was going to see you, Yosef. I thought you were gone. I thought I lost you. And not only have I been reunited with you, but I even am meeting your children. Right, vayotze Yosef me'im berka v'yishachu l'char la'apavarza. Takes the children off his lap, and they bow down. Vayikach Yosef et shneim es Ephraim bimino. So here's the crucial point. Vayikach Yosef es shneihem. He takes both of them. Es Ephraim bimino. He takes Ephraim, who is the younger son, and Yosef is facing Yaakov, so he takes him in his right hand and places him to the left of Yaakov. Mismol Yisrael, right? To the left of Yaakov. Yes, Menashe bismolo mimin Yisrael. And he puts Menashe on the right side of Yaakov. Vayageish elav. And they approach him. Vayishlach Yisrael yasimino vayoshes arosh Ephraim, and we know that of course Yaakov switches his hands. He takes his right hand and he puts it on the head of Ephraim. Sorry, I just lost the place for a minute. Where am I? Right, v'hu hatzair. He's even though he's the younger one. V'yasmolo arosh Menashe sikel es yadav ki Menashe habechor. Right, he switched his hands. He put his right hand on Ephraim, the left hand on Menashe, and then the pasuk repeats, "Sikel es yadav." This is a very—it's not, you know, the most obvious of choice of words. "Sikel es yadav." He, you know, deliberately guided, you know, using his thought process. He deliberately guided his hands, and he made the switch. And then he blesses them. Yosef gets upset. We won't read the whole thing inside. Yosef gets upset. He tells him, yeah, you know, father, you know, you've got it wrong. Ephraim's the younger one. Menashe's the older one. Why are you switching? Yaakov says, I know. I did this on purpose. Don't worry. Both of them are going to be great, but this is how I've chosen. Ephraim is going to be the one who is the one who grows to be even greater than Menashe. So, two questions that kind of emerge beyond just some of the minor points. The main two questions that emerge from this portion are, number one, why is Yaakov blessing Ephraim and Menashe in the first place? Presumably Yaakov has lots of grandchildren. Why does he choose just Ephraim and Menashe to bless? And it's clear from the psukim that he's singling them out. He even says to Yosef, by the way, even if you have more children, you know, they're not going to be on the same plane as Ephraim and Menashe. I'm blessing Ephraim and Menashe specifically. That's number one. And number two, of course, famous question, which everybody deals with, you know, why the switch? Why is he swapping them? And what exactly is he trying to portray in this switch? Is he really trying to marginalize Menashe, and he's choosing Ephraim over Menashe, similar to the way, you know, Yaakov was chosen over Esav, or the way that Yaakov favored Yosef over the rest of the brothers? Is this like another example of one of these, you know, favoring one child over the other, which could, you know, historically in the beginning of the Parshios of the Torah created problems, didn't help the family situation? Or is there something else going on here? And that's what we want to try to explore. So number one, what's going on with Yaakov's burial? What's the deal with being buried in Eretz Yisrael? Why was it so important? The extra shvua, etc. And number two, this episode in terms of Menashe and Ephraim, those are the two kind of episodes we want to keep in the back of our minds and that we want to try and develop. So to do that, let's just take one step back. Take a step back to Parshas Chayasara. And you know, there are some similarities. Chayas Vayechi Yaakov, or you know, this is the parsha of Yaakov's life. Chayasara is the parsha of Sarah's life. Both of them died in those parshios. That's, you know, the emphasis. Even though the parshas dealt with their death, the parshas are named after their life. So let's just take a step back to Parshas Chayasara to kind of bring out a yesod gadol in the philosophy of the Yavos, and then we'll try and be able to go back and apply it to our scenario. So, Vayihu Chayei Sarah, page number 2, source number 4. Sarah lived for Me'ah Shana V'Yesrim Shana V'Sheva Shanim Shnei Chayei Sarah, 127 years. V'Tama Sarah B'Kiryas Arba Hi Chevron. B'Eretz Kenan, she died in Kiryas Arba. V'Yavo Avraham L'Spol L'Sarah V'Levkosa. Avram came to eulogize her, to cry. Vayakum Avram Yal Pnei Meso, he got up, Vayidaber B'nei Chais Leimor. So he says to the people surrounding, in the people who live there, B'nei Chais, Ger V'Soshav Anochi Imachem, I am a stranger and a resident among you. Tenu Li Achuz Askevri Imachem, give me a burial plot, V'Ekbra Meisi Milfanai, so I can bury my wife, I can bury Sarah in front of me. And here, we got to pick up on just one phrase. This phrase, Ger V'Soshav Anochi Imachem, what does that mean? That phrase is inherently contradictory. Either somebody is a ger, they're a stranger, they're a visitor, they're foreign, or they're a toshav, or they're a resident. If you're a resident, then you're not a stranger, and if you're a stranger, you're not a resident. So what is Avram telling B'nei Chet? What is he telling these people? Ger v'toshav aruchim machem. So the commentary is, Rashi has a few different explanations. The Mefarshim all try and figure out what exactly is Avraham's intention here. But just in the back of our minds, we should make another observation that I only put a few psukim from this episode of Avraham buying this burial plot for Sarah, but if you, you know, it's been pointed out, one of my mentors, Rabbi Golden, who used to be the president of the RCA right before Rabbi Metanki, he pointed out that there are actually more psukim in the Torah that deal with Avraham buying Sarah's burial plot than psukim that dealt with the akedah itself, which happened just at the end of the previous parsha, the momentous akedah. There are more psukim that talk about Avram buying this grave than talked about the akedah itself. So you put that, keep that in the back of our mind. You know what? You know that this is some sort of monumental event, buying this plot of land, and the question of ger v'soshav. What is ger v'soshav? And the Rav suggested that Ger V'Soshav was really a crucial lesson that Avraham was sending to Bnei Israel that was going to be with us throughout the ages. And the reason it appears here, the reason that this was such a monumental event, is because Avraham, this is the first experience where Avraham is now, he's in Eretz Israel, this is his first foothold in Eretz Israel. And this is the first interaction with the people who are there. He's now, Avram's coming to Eretz Yisrael, it's his land, Hashem promised it to him, he's now engaging in the society that's there, and they're going to have to determine from here on what are going to be the rules of engagement between the Jewish people and the surrounding societies. And what Avram is doing is teaching not just the people around him, but also his children, also the generations to come, that the rules of engagement are defined by ger v'soshav anochi imachem, that the Jewish people have a very strange existence in the world. That the Jewish people are, on the one hand, regardless of where they are, regardless of how integrated into society that they are, regardless of how much we're engaged and how much we embrace and how much we contribute, so we're toshavim, we are residents, we are in part and parcel of the society around us, but we're always gerim. on some level, the Jewish people are never fully integrated. There's always that balance on the other side, that the Jewish people are different, that the perspective that the Jewish people come from, the worldview that we have, it's not in confluence with this general society around us. There's overlap, and there can be engagement, and we can contribute, and we can benefit mutually. But that difference is always has to be clear, and that's exactly what Avraham was emphasizing at this point in time. Perhaps not coincidentally, at the point where he's dealing with the burial of Sarah. I heard from Rav Shechter once a really fascinating story from the Rav. At one point in time, the Rav was approached by a descendant of the Rothschilds, and who was living in France, and he approached the Rav. He came to America to approach the Rav to try and convince the Rav to become the chief rabbi of France. And so the Rav had different interactions with this descendant of the Rothschild family. And at one point, this individual told the Rav a story about one of his grandfather's great-grandfather, I don't know exactly who it was, but the Rothschilds were not, at least this family, they were not exactly the most religious family on the face of the earth. And there wasn't much, they did not have much to do with their Jewish roots. But surprisingly, this individual was telling the Rav that one of his ancestor in the early 1900s or 1940s, 1950s, when he passed away, he left in his will that he wanted to be buried in Israel. That's what he wanted to do. That was his wish. He wasn't, I think Rav Shechter said he might have even been intermarried, but he wanted to be buried in Israel. That was his wish. And apparently, when the president of France at the time, it was Charles de Gaulle, according to the story. So the Rothschilds were obviously a very influential family, politically connected. So when Charles de Gaulle heard that Rothschild wanted to be buried in Israel, he was furious. And the Schefter quoted that the way the story goes, he said, he's going to be buried in Israel. He was born in France. He was raised in France. He was educated in France. He made all of his money in France. He's going to be buried in France. It's an insult to bury a Rothschild in Eretz Israel. So apparently the family was successful in navigating the waters. They were able to bury him in Eretz Yisrael. But the Rav just pointed out that even somebody who came from this background, somebody who was not involved in Jewish life, who was very assimilated, understood that on some level, when it comes to the eternal place of rest, when it comes to your final destination, he himself felt that he wanted to be in Eretz Yisrael. He wanted to be with the Jewish people. So this notion that the Jewish people, they don't belong in France. He didn't belong buried in France. He did everything in France. He was totally integrated in France. He was a major, major player in France. But he wanted to be buried in Israel. When it comes to the eternal resting place, he wanted to be buried in Israel. And that's exactly what Avram Avinu was expressing. Sarah, he's burying her in Eretz Yisrael. Ger v'shoshav anochi imachem. That's the way the Jewish people, that's the mentality the Jewish people need to have.
But he was five of brothers. All five of them lived in different countries, like Germany, Austria, England, from the original father that had those five children.
Oh, so the Rothschild family, you're saying, was spread out.
And the Rothschild family established Zichron Yaakov in Eretz Yisrael, so they had a hand in building Eretz Yisrael, one community in Eretz Yisrael.
Interesting. I don't know all the details of the Rothschild family. This is the story I heard from Rav Shechter.
There's also a winery in Israel, a big winery, and they were producing a lot of wine there.
So I don't know which branches of the family, apparently, but this was the branch of the family that was in France. So I don't know. This was the way the story went.
The old man's wish was to be buried in Israel, and Charles de Gaulle obviously did a lot of bad things to Israel.
When I was in Israel Sukkot's time, Rabbi Kahana, the current Rabbi Kahana, came out with a article blasting people who want to be buried in Eretz Yisrael that don't live in Eretz Yisrael. He said he was going to go to the Knesset and try to get a din that they're not, if you're not living in, it was a couple page article.
That's wild. That's wild, but we see in the Chumash people who are living outside of Eretz Yisrael who wanted to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. That's wild, wild. Very interesting. I didn't hear about that.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
I have to write him a letter.
So, with this sort of framework in mind, let's go back to the original two episodes that we started with. We'll see a little bit more detail about those episodes and try and and see if this can kind of help us fill out the picture and understand some of the questions that we raised. Let's start with Ephraim and Menashe. So we asked two questions with Ephraim and Menashe. Number one, why Ephraim and Menashe specifically? Why are we singling them out? And number two, how should we understand this episode of the swap? How should we understand it? We know that Yaakov presumably was not trying to marginalize Menashe and pick Ephraim. We know that he himself had way too much experience in that sort of mentality in terms of raising children, and that did not serve well in his past. So presumably he's not making that mistake again. So what is he trying to tell us with this swap? The Netziv, Rabbi Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, lived in the 19th century, wrote a very, very fascinating commentary on the Chumash called Emek Davar. He has a suggestion that I think is worthwhile to learn together. Source number five. We're going to start on this first column. It's the middle of this first column on the Pasuk Sikeles Yadav. I'm sorry that it came out a little bit faint in the scan. Sikeles Yadav Ki Menashe HaBachor. It's basically right smack in the middle of the first column on the right. So first of all, he points out who miutar. This is superfluous. We already know the pasuk already explains that Yaakov switched his hands. So why is the pasuk then repeat sikeles yadav ki Menashe habachor, that he deliberately thought this through and put his right hand on Ephraim instead of Menashe? Sharei yadanu mi inyan haparsha ki Menashe habachor. We already knew that Menashe is bechor. We know that. We know that because the Torah told us when Menashe was born, when Ephraim was born. We know that Menashe is the bechor. So you see clearly that there's some sort of depth, some sort of intention that the Torah is trying to impart here. Really, Yaakov shouldn't have deliberately switched his hands. If he wanted to have his right hand on top of Ephraim and his left hand on top of Menashe, so what would have been the most logical thing to do? Switch the people, exactly. He should have situated Menashe on the left side and Ephraim on the right side. So even when Yosef came Yosef situated the children, so Yaakov should have told him, "I don't want it this way. Switch them." Why does he have to exert himself? He's 147 years old, and he's about to die. He's got to worry about switching his hands. Just let the grandchildren move over. Avabasher Menashe Abachur, Mishum Hachi Hayim Kavein Shiyamod Menashe Liragel Hayemani Shel Yaakov, the Ephraim Liragel Hasmol. So what Yaakov wanted is, no, he didn't want to switch them. He didn't want to switch sides. If he would have put Menashe on the left, so that would have been marginalizing. That would have been exactly what happened to Esav. That would have been the same thing when Yaakov favored Yosef over the other brothers. If he would have taken Menashe and put him on the left, that would have been belittling him, insulting, and marginalizing. He wanted Menashe the Bechor to be on the right side, and even though he wasn't going to get the right hand, he at least would be next to the right leg. So what does that mean? Virak es yadav sikel sheyeh lehefech. Only his hands he switched to the opposite side. V'taymo shel davar. The reason for this is she'af api shehikdim Yaakov es Ephraim lefnei Menashe. Even though he's picking Ephraim before Menashe, he's putting Ephraim first. U'mishum hachi haya b'midbar rosh adegel. And that's why you see when the Jewish people were traveling in the desert, it wasn't Menashe who was the Rosh, was one of the Rosh Degalim. It was Ephraim who was one of the Rosh Degalim. Ephraim was really considered the Bechor in that regard. Mikomakom pipikude deparshas Pinchas hayalehefech. But you see that when Bnei Yisrael were counted in Parshas Pinchas, that Menashe was not counted first. I'm sorry, Ephraim was not counted first. Menashe was counted first. So you see that Menashe wasn't completely being disregarded. Meaning, yes, Ephraim was the Rosh Degel, but Menashe was counted first. So you see that Menashe did have some sort of stature as the rightful Bechor. Masha'in came to Menashe Ksiv, sorry, I skipped the second. V'lo od ala afil b'kudei de parashas b'midbar, kosu b'chol de galim v'achonim alav, Masha'in came to Menashe Ksiv alav matem Menashe, kol ze bal lamdenu, Shelohaya Ephraim kodim l'Menashe ella be'inyanim ruchaniim. That Ephraim had certain Milos over Menashe. What was Ephraim's point of excelling? He excelled in the spiritual realm. Mashe lemaile mehalichos olam hateva. As opposed to what Menashe's forte was, Menashe excelled in the natural world. Menashe was a man of the world. Avavalichos olam haye Menashe kodem v'gadol me'Ephraim. And in that regard, in being a part of the world, so Menashe far exceeded Ephraim. Mishum hachi b'minyan ha-rishon b'har chorev, shehaya shchinas olam al roshem. So when it came to the first time Bnei Israel were counted in the desert, that was at Har Chorev when they were engaged with the Shechina. The Shechina was on top of them. V'chol ha-anhaga ha-isal malam in ha-teva, and everything that the Jewish people, the entire existence for the Jewish people in the desert, was not a natural existence. They were protected by clouds of glory, and they were receiving man from heaven. So that was a spiritual existence. So there, Hay Ephraim Kodem. So in that regard, as part of the Rosh Degel, as the one of the leaders of the Jewish people in the desert, so that was Ephraim's realm, because the desert was a very spiritual existence. Aval b'pikude to Arvos Moav, but when they were counted in Arvos Moav, in Parshas Pinchas, and before they entered Eretz Yisrael, b'knisasam la'aretz, they were about to enter Eretz Yisrael, shahaya kimat b'halichos ha-teva, once they entered Eretz Yisrael, their existence was going to change. Their existence was going to become very much a natural existence. They were going to have to plant themselves. They were going to have to harvest their own fields. They were going to have to defend themselves against their enemies. It was going to be a much more natural existence. Right? As kimivur la'halon, it was safer b'idbar zorm. The Netziv has a long explanation, a long elaboration on this. Mishum hachi haya Menashe kodem. So when they came to counting the Jewish people at that time, so you count Menashe first. Because there, Menashe's expertise is the most relevant. And then he continues, we'll just skip to the next column, the very top of the next column, the last column here. V'hinei hayad mishamesha says Rosh v'hadas. So when it comes to the hands are what are involved with they're more in the air, they're involved with the head, they're involved with the intellect. The haregel mishameshes halichos haguf lifetivo. But the foot is grounded on the floor. The foot is what walks, the foot is what's engaged in nature. The hands are more amorphous. The hands are involved in the spiritual realms. The feet, that's what's implanted on the floor. So mishum hachi, we'll stop here. But that's exactly why. So Menashe was next to the right foot. The right is the stronger side. So Menashe was next to the right foot because that was his forte. Ephraim got the right hand because he was the expert in the more spiritual realm. But what you see clearly is that if this is true, that Yaakov is taking Ephraim and Menashe, two grandchildren, only these two grandchildren, and he's blessing them and he's making them his own. And he's emphasizing that one excels in the natural world, and one excels in the spiritual world, and that both are necessary together. So on some levels, this is another sort of hint of a ger v'toshav. You have someone who's in the world, and you have someone who's a spiritual master. Ultimately, the right hand goes upon Ephraim, the one who's engaged in the spiritual realm, but both are being brought into under Yaakov's belt. And it's interesting, on this Netziv, which I have heard of source number 6, this is just a nice application of this, that at the Bris Mila, we know that we bless the boy, when the boy comes to the Bris Mila, so we say that we bless him, that Yasimcha Elokim ke'Ephraim u'cha Menashe. So the Netziv says that, in general, we have a concept that you don't want to give someone a bracha that's not relevant to them. You don't want to come up to somebody who has nothing, who sits in a kol all day and learns Torah all day, and say, you should have a lot of hatzlacha in business. It makes no sense. What kind of bracha is that? They're not engaged in business at all. And vice versa. So the Netziv says, I don't understand. If you, when you're blessing someone, you want to give them a bracha that's relevant. So when it comes to a bris milah, when the child is 8 days old, so we say to him, Yesimcha Elokim ke'Ephraim u'cha. There's a child here who's 8 days old. We don't know how this child is going to turn out. We don't know where he's going to excel or where he's going, what kind of life he's going to pursue. But whichever aspect it is that he pursues, be it like Ephraim or be it like Menashe, there he should have bracha. If he was going to be like Ephraim, he should be blessed to be like Ephraim, and he should be blessed to succeed. If he's going to be like Menashe, so he should be blessed to succeed also. Again, both of these aspects are facets of the Jewish life that we embrace. But then, just to get back to the previous point, which is, so why specifically Ephraim and Menashe? Ultimately, we have to realize that Ger B'toshav Anochi Imachem. And Yaakov blessed Ephraim and Menashe specifically because he emphasized, and that's what he was emphasizing when he said to Yosef, I want to bless these two children, the ones that were born to you in Mitzrayim before I got there. What do you mean, they were born to Mitzrayim before I got there? Yaakov was saying, there's a danger involved. Ephraim and Menashe, they didn't grow up in Yaakov's house. They were never firmly rooted in the Jewish life that Yaakov raised his children with. They grew up in Mitzrayim with their father being the second in command to Paro. They were born in a totally different environment. So Yaakov says, these two children, they need to be, I need to take them under my belt, because ultimately what needs to happen is that they need to be rooted ger v'toshav anochi imachem. They can excel in the world, they can excel in ruchnius, but no matter what it is, ultimately they have to be connected to their roots. They have to be kishimon kiruvein yuhuli. They have to be part of their ancestry, and they have to be connected in that regard. And that's why it's specifically them, because they were born before I got to Mitzrayim. The children who are born to you after, if you have more children now, that's fine. I don't need to take them under my belt because I'm here and they'll be connected to me. These two children who never had that connection, they need to be brought back to their roots. That was the message number one in the Ephraim Menashe. And now I think we can further appreciate the previous issue in terms of Yaakov's burial. So again, back to the parallel, so to speak, to the Chayasara, that Yaakov's burial.
What ages were Ephraim and Menashe?
I don't know offhand if it could be that different parts, and there could be that in the Seder Olam they try and calculate. I don't remember offhand what their ages are. It could be that even Rashi, I haven't...
But they're still young, what I'm saying is they can still go back to the roots.
No, I mean, they know. Yaakov has been in Mitzrayim for 17 years, right. And they were born before that. So they have to be at least, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they could be 30 for all I know. But they have to be at least, 18 years old or so.
Because when you are an adult, it's hard to bring him back to your forefather roots. When there are children, you can still need him told Judaism. What?
You have the whole concept of Baalei Tshuva.
No, right. So it could have probably been about, 9, 10? Yaakov, Yosef got Asnas after he became appointed viceroy. Figure 7 years of good. And what?
2 years.
I said, how many? 2 years? Because there were 5 years. Another 5 years worth of... So when he brought Yaakov down, they were probably assuming that the good years followed immediately after his appointment. So he'd probably make him about 10. Yes? No?
No, but then plus 17 did Yaakov...
I mean, at this point, they're clearly older than 10. Meaning that could be when Yaakov got there. When Yaakov got there, it could be that they were younger. But at this point, they're clearly...
We're 27, then the question is...
But I mean, I think the point that you're raising is that Yaakov was already involved in their lives, at least for 17 years. He's been there for 17 years. Right. So, I mean, it wasn't like, I don't know, again, you have to figure out, it could be that they're, I don't remember offhand if the calculations are made, but it could be that they were indeed at least younger. I mean, at this point, they're... But the message, I think, is still what's the crucial point. But going back to the burial scene, to the promise. So we noted that the pasuk says that simna yadcha tachas yirechi, right? That Yaakov wanted Yosef to put his hand underneath his thigh, and most of the mefarshim, Rashi, most of the mefarshim say, what is that a reference to? Simna yadcha tachas yirechi is the way the Torah expressed someone taking an oath, someone making a vow that they're going to do exactly what they agreed to do. But that, again, raises the question, well, if that was the case, so then why, after Yosef does actually put his hand there, and after Yosef says, I'm going to listen to you, so why does Yaakov then say to him, Vishi Shavali, swear to me? I mean, didn't he already swear? He already agreed. How does that work? So the parish of Yosef ben Yitzchak b'chor shur, he was one of the Baalei HaTosos. He lived towards the end of the 12th century in France, and he wrote a commentary on the Chumash. So in his commentary, he actually has a slightly different definition of Simna Yadcha Tachas Yirechi. Look at source number 7. Simna Yadcha Tachas Yirechi, Hishtabed Lekach. You should become subservient to this. Lios Nasun Tachas Ragli Lekach. You should be subservient to me, subordinate to me. Put your hand under my leg is a sign of subordinance, that you should be subordinate to me regarding this. So yes, it's a similar sort of idea in the sense that he's trying to bolster his commitment, Yosef's commitment to bearing Yaakov in Eretz Yisrael. But it's Rabbi Silverberg, who wrote an article on the Versal Beis Medrash on Gush's website, pointed out that there's another layer here. And that is that Yaakov is saying to Yosef, you've been in Mitzrayim all these years, you're number two to Paro. I don't know where your loyalties, where your main loyalties lie. Paro is not going to be so happy when you tell him that I'm leaving Mitzrayim to go be buried in Israel. You're number two. You're big in the government here. Where are your loyalties going to lie? Are your loyalties going to lie with Mitzrayim? They're going to be very upset that we're leaving? Or are your loyalties going to be to me? Subordinate yourself, not necessarily in the sense of an oath or a vow, but be subordinate to me. Show me that your loyalties are with me. Be subordinate to your ancestry. Side with your father. Side with your heritage, and bury me in Eretz Yisrael. So again, Yaakov on his deathbed is emphasizing this very point. Yer v'toshav anochi imachem. You're here in Mitzrayim. You're part of the government. You're number two. Ger v'toshav. You're still a ger. So make sure that your real roots are in Eretz Yisrael, and that's going to be reflected in my burial. So if you see that you put this kind of all together and you look at the Yaakov's life, so Yaakov's life was a very tumultuous life, right? That's what he says to Paro. When Paro first looks at him, he says, you don't look so good. And so he says, yeah, I had a tough life. So it was a life of where he was forced into Golos. He said before he went into Golos, he was determined that he was going to make it back to Eretz Yisrael. He makes it back to Eretz Yisrael. There's more problems, and now he's back in Golos, and now he's on his deathbed, and he's in Golos. His life was a life of tumult and of exile and return. And on his deathbed here in Golos, he's saying, "I'm not going to let mortality get in the way. My eternal resting place is going to be back in Eretz Yisrael, back in the roots." He doesn't say, and it's interesting. He doesn't say that it's going to be in Eretz Yisrael. He says, "I want to be buried with my fathers. I want to be in my family burial plot." It's his roots. He's going to get back to his roots. That's what he's determined to do, and that's the message that he's emphasizing constantly on his deathbed through Ephraim and Asha, through this whole episode. And perhaps that's what Chazal mean when Chazal say that in Gemara and Tainus, that we can go back to source number one. The Chazal tell us in Tainus on Daf Hayam Beis, the middle of the first line, Amar of Yochanan, Yaakov Avinu lo meis. Right? Yaakov Avinu, he never died. And the Gemara says, I don't understand, what do you mean he never died? What do you mean? He was eulogized. He was preserved. He was buried. What do you mean he didn't die? So he says no. I'm not making up my own nonsense. I'm just telling you what the pasuk says. Shenemar va'ata al tira avdi Yaakov. Nu Hashem, don't be scared. V'atachas Yisrael ki hineni moshiach mirachok v'yasaracha me'eretz shavim. Right. Don't worry. Jewish people, you're always going to be okay. I'm going to save you and your children. Makish hu lizaro. Yaakov is connected to the children in the pasuk. Makish hu lizaro. There should be a line of comparison drawn between Yaakov and his children from the pasuk. Ma zaro b'chayim afu b'chayim. Just like his children are always alive, so too Yaakov is always alive. The Yaakov Avinu was so concerned that he should always be. His ancestry should always be part of his roots, and this is the idea that his children should always have. He wanted this message to be imparted to them. So Yaakov Avinu, even after his death, that's what he was concerned with. So Yaakov Avinu, in that sense, perhaps never died.